Over 20 years ago, I was involved in a terrible act. A nightmare of my own creation that I thought I could outrun. But I can't run anymore. It's time to end it. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 1, Confession. It is 11:24 a.m. I am standing outside the Barton Public Library. But last night, I was standing outside the house of John and Carol Herman. He lives in Barton. They must have moved here after they got together. I'm not exactly sure when. I know it's not my Carol in there, but of all the Carols I've seen, she looks and sounds the most familiar to me. On the other hand, I have a beard. I mean, he has a beard. The light was on in their bedroom. I imagine I was sitting up in bed reading a book. That's what I would have been doing. I wanted to get closer, but I didn't. I didn't want them to see me. I just imagined Carol talking about her day, decompressing, wondering about the future. She does that. The thing about this version of me that is different than all the others is that Carol and I, or rather, Carol and him, this other John Herman, they have two children, two little girls, and they chose to raise them in Barton. That's crazy to me. I would never have considered it. He's clearly very different than I am, but the reason why I'm making this recording is because I want you to know that I got to the box before it got to him. I showed up right in Alfred P. Daniel's office, and I took it so it wouldn't be sent in the mail. This John Herman has been shielded. I'm gonna put the box in a storage unit I've rented out of state. It'll remain there indefinitely with a few others I've collected. There's a logging truck going by. This John Herman will not start an audio project like the others. He's got everything he needs right here. And I'm not gonna let him mess it up. I mean, I find this version of me so fascinating because my Carol never wanted children. It's strange and incredibly beautiful. All right. I'm gonna go into the library now. Up front, I want you to know that I deserve whatever is coming to me, though I'm not sure Alistair deserved what ultimately came to him. I will allow you to be the judge of that after you've heard the whole story. For me, running from the past has had its consequences. Recently, I've seen my life as it could have been. I have been gifted, or perhaps cursed, with the ability to bear witness to these outcomes. Despite this opportunity, I can't undo my past. I can't change the decisions that I made. From here on out, I'm going to be straightforward with you, my listeners. And that starts with a confession. When I was in high school, my best friend and I committed a murder. My best friend's name was Alistair Glamis. You deserve an explanation for this project, this podcast. Hear that? I am surrounded by pages. My notes, my research, my stories. I'm sitting here in a basement with a microphone with an aim to tell the truth. Why release multiple series of contradictory recordings of what appears to be me, John Herman, with little explanation? The first thing you need to know about me is that I've always been passionate about audio projects. It may seem like a minor point now, but it will prove to be very, very important. Ever since I was a little kid, I was recording things. I pressed the record button on this little handheld device I carried around in my pocket. I recorded my friends. I recorded my family. I recorded my teachers in school. I recorded people secretly during their good moments, their bad moments. People find beauty in different things. The recorder itself was a gift from my parents, who used to record my sister Talia and I playing together as young children. Here's one of those early recordings.
They're not ready to hatch, but you can take care of them.
You can take care of them, Dad.
They see hatch on their own. Just keep them warm.
When I was a child, everything was so simple. Of course, it didn't seem that way at the time. In a child's mind, life is terribly complex. Childhood, for the child, is a time of great emotion, of great upheaval. New ideas are constantly altering one's very perception of reality. As one ages, the world a child thought existed reveals its true nature. The secrets of life and death become known. And these lessons of truth almost always conflict with what the child had been taught and told in their youth. But what if the final conclusions of an enlightened adult are ultimately as naive and fantastic as those of a child? How do you tell an adult that the nature of existence goes far beyond "what if there is more"? How do you communicate that message? Great philosophers, poets, writers have desperately tried, but all are lost to history, shelved in dusty basements, studied as novelties in boring classes. And for that reason, the cycle continues.
Alistair Glamis. Yeah, I don't remember much about him other than his hair. He had bright blonde hair.
It was practically white.
Yep. It really was,
wasn't it? At the time of this recording, my wife Carol only knew that I was preparing a project about the disappearance of Alistair Glamis, inspired by a cardboard box I inherited after he was declared dead many years after his disappearance. Carol remembered Alistair, but she was completely unaware that I remembered him more so. Carol didn't know what the box meant to me. She didn't know about the pineapple. She didn't know about the key. She didn't know about the murder.
Do you remember anything special about him?
Special? Other than the hair? Was there more to remember?
I haven't seen my wife Carol for over a year. I know that must be tough for you to hear, and even tougher for you to comprehend. I promise all will be told.
He was only around for those last few months, so I guess the fact that I remember him at all says something. He was a bit memorable, I guess. We shared an English class together.
It's almost like I knew what would happen. Though I assure you, I did not know what was coming.
I could say I definitely found him interesting. Ugh, this was just so long ago, John. He was a bit memorable, I guess.
I lied to her. I told her I had never spoken to Alistair Glamis. I told her that it was a mystery why he would leave such a strange package to me.
Do you remember anything about where he was from? Where he was born?
No and no.
Did he ever talk about his parents?
I don't remember ever having a conversation with him. He was new, he was different, and that sums him up.
Why did I lie to my wife? I was scared. The truth was that I remembered everything, and I couldn't bring myself to share with her the person that I had left behind so long ago. When the package arrived, sent by a lawyer named Alfred P. Daniels, stamped by the post office in Barton, New Hampshire, I ripped open the cardboard right there on my front porch. I was alone at home. Carol was still at work. My heart was pounding so strongly that I thought my chest might explode. And there they were, the vinyl records, hidden by decoy slipcases in case they were ever discovered by anyone else. Carol came home that evening and found them laid out on the floor. I should have told her everything right then. She might not have believed me, but at least I would not have these lies. Honestly, I never thought I would see the records again.
You want me to explain how you and I met? I thought this was going to just be a show about Alistair.
It is. It will be. But I'm realizing that it's also going to be about me. And by extension, it will be about you as well. Is that okay?
I guess so. I mean, whatever you need. Okay, so we met in high school, but we were never romantic. Do you want me to say that?
Of course. It's true. Did you date people back then?
Yeah, sure. But I only dated boys from other towns. It would have been weird dating Barton boys. And let's be clear, there weren't exactly a lot of nearby towns.
But things changed between us.
Yes, when we were older, things changed between us.
How did we meet? Can you tell them?
We met again at our 10th high school reunion. We had both been through bitter breakups. At least I definitely had. It was sort of like meeting for the first time.
I almost didn't go. I'm glad I did. I'm glad we both did.
I guess it wasn't the best time and place to reconnect. But it turned out to be the best time and place. It was dark that night, so we held hands, and that's when it all started, for me at least. That's when I started to really think about you.
So how did John Herman meet Alistair Glamis? Well, despite the irony you will no doubt perceive in my answer, it is the truth. My friendship with Alistair Glamis started with a terrifyingly strange audio recording. Alistair Glamis arrived in Barton, New Hampshire sometime in the last 3 months of our senior year, while his disappearances fascinated many different versions of me. I can tell you that it was his appearance that still fascinates me to this day. And why Barton? Barton, New Hampshire might as well be the end of the earth. I know that you know a lot about the town already. You know that Barton is heavily wooded. You know about the town square, how it includes a library, a country store, the town hall, and a few houses. You know about Ray's Stream, a small offshoot of the much larger Androscoggin River. You might even carry an abstract idea of the house where I used to live, or more concretely, the house next door, where a man named Ricky Rawls may still live there to this very day. You know about the Crescent House. You know that Barton is isolated. It's way up north. And you may know that the stars and moon are particularly bright on a dark night. What you probably don't know is that the winters are bitterly cold, but the summers are beautiful and warm. The birds singing on a spring morning are so loud that barely anyone uses an alarm clock to wake up each day. You probably don't know that the people in town are mostly kind. When you live there, everyone knows your name. Everyone says hello to you at the country store, at the library, at the post office. And there's something else you don't know. It's something that only I can tell you. Barton, New Hampshire is the setting for many, many acts of terrifying horror.
I remember you telling me that back then, at the end of senior year, you were trying to hold your breath until the end of the school year so you could disappear and go off to college. Are you going to tell them that? I mean, you and your sister are cool now. It's all just history.
Carol was right. She was talking about a situation I was having with my sister Talia at the time just before I connected with Alistair. I will mention it, because it shows where I was mentally. Talia lives in Seattle now. She is happily married. She has a great job. We were sort of estranged for many years, but the weird feelings faded with time. That was a dark point for me, for both of us. Just before Alistair's arrival in town, my younger sister broke up with my best friend at the time, Richard, or rather Ricky, Rawls. And none of us were friends anymore. As I reflect now, it was all just a bit of teen drama. But over just a few months, I had become a recluse, a loner. I was ready to move on. I was certainly vulnerable. It's time for me to tell you about the exact moment that Alistair and I met. I still remember it like it was yesterday. It was during those dark times of teenage loneliness and breath-holding that the infamous white-haired new kid walked up to me in the hallway of our school. It was as simple as that. It was after the last bell when everyone was rushing from the building. I had to catch the bus. I had my driver's license, but I didn't have a car. Alistair stopped me by my locker. "You're John Herman," Alistair said. "We're in the same physics class. You record things, right?" I was taken aback because I was not openly recording people. As I had always done, I was recording people on the sly. So I was more than a little surprised when the new kid introduced himself in this way. And then he said this: "Are you recording me right now? You are, aren't you? Show me." The thing is that I was recording him. The recorder was in my pocket. My finger had pressed the record button as he approached. As you can see, I was always recording things. Call it a creepy form of entertainment, but it is and was who I am. I admitted it. I admitted I was recording, and he smiled. "I knew it," he said. "Show me." I remember this so distinctly. I will never forget it. Without thinking, I pulled the recorder from my pocket and Alistair grinned. Before I continue, I want you to know that Alistair later told me that other versions of me denied him. He said that other versions of John Herman would not speak to him again after that first attempt at conversation. John Herman would actually deny that he was recording. So therefore, often, according to Alistair, Alistair Glamis and John Herman would never become friends at all. But during that first conversation when I did not deny him, that I, John Herman, admitted to recording him, Alistair smiled briefly and whispered that he needed my help. In fact, Alistair said that I was the only person that could help him. He was calm, but I could see behind his eyes that there was a desperation. I looked at him, and I told him that I needed to catch the bus. My heart was still pounding from his unexpected knowledge of my hidden recording device. He nodded, somewhat knowingly, and he said he needed to catch a bus too. That's when he said something so very strange. He said that if I didn't help him, then he would be dead soon. You'd think that I would have immediately run to a teacher, or the principal, or even Chief Talkins. But no. Instead, I laughed at him. I sincerely thought he was joking, but his face grew pale. He looked like he might be sick right there on the tiles of the school hallway floor. I repeated that I needed to catch the bus, and that's when he leaned in close, very close, and he said simply, "I need to show you something right now." Then he reached into his pocket and pulled out an identical recording device to the one that was in my pocket. He then just stared at me. The hallway was empty now. All the kids had cleared out. It was just me and him. I looked down at the recorder in his hand like it was a piece of my own brain. And there was more. Alistair raised his recorder in the air right to my face, and he pressed the play button. And I heard Alistair's voice on the recording, and then I heard my own. It was our conversation, the conversation we just had. He had recorded it, or at least that is what I thought. But something was different. Our words were different. I was saying different things. And then, in the recording, I was leaving. I was running off to catch the bus. Alistair pressed the stop button. My mouth moved, but I was unable to form words. "Thank you," he said. "Thank you for missing the bus this time." As I was soon to learn, this was only the beginning of the existential dread that I would be facing as I became friends with Alistair Glamis. This episode, the one you're listening to, begins the final set of 6 episodes to end it all. It will end. We are about to go over the cliff together. At this time, I encourage you to send me any questions you have, or any thoughts at all. In the coming weeks, I will explain the murder. It is important to me that you know everything. It is important to me that you are able to prepare yourself for what is to come. And in the meantime, I'm sending a message. If you're out there, hear it. Listen closely. What hath God wrought? What hath God wrought? Thank you to John and Danielle Herman for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Prom Queen, Ross Boyd, Ben Von Wildenhaus, and Rudy Sims for providing the music. This project is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk in 2 weeks. Partners in Crime Media.